This episode of Health Vibes is brought to you by the brand you trust the most, Jolly's Pharmacy Limited, leading the way in healthcare.
At Jolly's Pharmacy, your health and wellness is our passion. No wonder Jolly's Pharmacy provides the widest variety of the highest quality vitamin supplements and remedies for your lifestyle activity and nutritional needs. Take care of your body. Get the Multivitamins Advantage Supply to enhance, promote, improve, repair, and revitalize your body. Jolly's for the complete line of preventative and curative health supplies and tonics. Rejuvenate with men's and women's one-a-day tablets. Boost concentration. Try Centrum and omega-3s to build your immune and nervous system functions, strengthen your cardiovascular system, boost bone health. For stamina, get all your natural balanced megabytes herbal supplements, men's daily formula for sexual energy and function, so palmetto plus supplements to soothe joint pain. Feel like a dynamo, get up and go, catch back your mojo at Jolly's, Dominica's principal healthcare pharmacy. Why? Because you deserve more from a drugstore.
Jolly's Pharmacy presents a new and innovative radio program, Health Vibes.
Health Vibes.
Every Wednesday morning on Q95 FM. Health Vibes, hosted by Carlton Lando and Pearl Fontaine Butler. Health Vibes from 10:15 to 11 a.m. It's not just your average talk show. It's appealing and educational with a bit of humor. Real vibes on your health. Now, that's the vibe. Health Vibes on Q95. Every Wednesday from 10:15 to 11 a.m. with Pearl and Carlton. Tune in.
Welcome to Health Vibes, Dominica's most foremost program on health, medicine, nutrition, and wellness, featuring the latest news on conventional and alternative medicine and health care. Now, here's your host, Carlton Lando, and co-host, Pearl Fontaine Butler.
A pleasant good morning to you, our very, very, very warm listeners. We are so happy that you have joined us on another episode of Health Vibes, your very own health talk show brought to you by Jolly's Pharmacy. Good morning, good morning, good morning. I know many people are still at home because the children are at home, so many housewives at home doing chores and most likely listening to us on QFM radio. We want to say to you, welcome. It's a great show. It's a time that we always advise people to have a pen and paper close by. There might be something that you would not have learned, you would not have known before, that you certainly would want to jot down on a paper and remember and apply to your everyday living. My co-host Pearl is there looking all sort of melancholy this morning.
Well, good morning, Dominica. Good morning, Carlton. Not melancholy at all, but you know, I'm dressed in black, and so black has that kind of, you know, vibe to it. But I like wearing black sometimes, you know. Sometimes it's nice to just kind of settle down. Right.
Yes.
So today we have a really great topic in store.
Yes.
Very interesting, but I'll let Carlton, you know, introduce that. But I am very happy to be here, and today is such a beautiful day, and we really have to be thankful for being alive this morning. I mean, we take life for granted, and we ought to just really take in a deep breath and just give thanks, okay? And so that's where I am this morning.
Excellent. Yeah. You know, I mean, just on Easter Monday, my family and I went to visit the freshwater lake and the Boreal Lake. And I can tell you, I hadn't been up there maybe since in the 80s.
Wow.
And Pearl, I was in awe with just the beauty of nature and all this rich, pure, clean, serene water just gushing, you know, through the sides of the road, and you just see pureness, like pureness to the highest level, and it really says, I mean, when you look at that, who can question? I mean, there must be a God, there must be a creator,
course,
you know, where did all these things come from, you know?
and I totally understand what you're saying. I remember when I went to visit Niagara Falls in Canada, and when I saw it, I was just so amazed. Yes. And I just said, thine eyes have seen the glory. Because listen, you can't fathom how beautiful those falls were. Oh my gosh. But to be there to see it live, it was just breathtaking. Like, honestly, you know, and sometimes that's how I feel about Dominica when I go to different areas in the country and I visit, and it's just, wow, we have all of this here for us.
Yes.
I mean, we really have to be thankful.
Yes. So this morning, Pearl, as you did see, we have a very interesting show. I think it's one that many people will want to call in and basically, you know, share their views, ask questions. We are focusing on the accident scene. You know, many times we drive by and accidents happen at all times, whether it's a traffic accident, whether it's a fire, whether it's someone falling from a building. And many times we don't know what to do. Sometimes we take on our own and try to help, and sometimes we make the situation even worse. And so we have Mr. Wayne later, who is the public relations officer for the fire and ambulance service here in Dominica, a very senior staff member of the fire and ambulance service. He's our guest today, and he's going to be basically talking, taking us through as to, you know, what they do when they come across accidents. I know that even he and his men, they work really hard. When you think of the footballers who perished a couple of years ago when the road collapsed on them, and the how deep that was, and they had to actually venture down there to retrieve the people that were, you know, so you recognize that it's a lot of work. That, you know, they use ropes and all these things. So he's going to basically take us through sort of things that they do and why they do it. People sometimes don't understand the mechanics of the level of work that they do. So he'll be exploring that. But I know you have some news items for us this morning.
Yes.
So we're going to go through the news items and then come back to Mr. Later.
Absolutely. Okay, so in the region, topping the news in health this week, health officials in St. Kitts and Nevis are monitoring an outbreak of yellow fever in Brazil to ensure the endemic does not spread to the Twin Island Federation. Chief Medical Officer Dr. Hazel Laws said the Ministry of Health was monitoring the outbreak of yellow fever in Brazil, where a traveler from the Netherlands who was on vacation contracted the fever. She said the ministry was increasing personnel at the port of entries to safeguard passengers coming from affected countries, and added plans are in place to tighten surveillance. Laws noted additional screening will be done to all countries that have yellow fever endemic. A World Health Organization release recently indicated that as of April 3, 2017, yellow fever transmission continued to expand towards the Atlantic coast of Brazil in areas not deemed to be at risk for yellow fever transmission prior to the revised risk assessment. Yellow fever is an acute viral hemorrhagic disease transmitted by infected mosquitoes. The yellow in the name refers to the jaundice that affects some patients.
So Pearl, I mean, even reading this, listening to you read this article, I mean, clear cut for me as a medical person, some key points I'm taking there. One, that the disease is viral by nature. And so we know with viruses, they are very easy to be transmitted.
Right.
It is caused by a mosquito, usually the Aedes aegypti mosquito, which is endemic to Dominica. We do have that type of mosquito as well. And that mosquito can also carry the yellow fever virus. It carries the chikungunya, the dengue as well. And so I guess hence the reason why most of us in the Caribbean basin, particularly the Eastern Caribbean, should be concerned. You must remember as well, once one person comes in with such a virus and a mosquito were to bite them, then the transmission just go haywire. And so I think, and the other concern too that we must have relating to this yellow fever is that it causes internal bleeding. And that in itself is a major complication. And it also causes liver cirrhosis. So it causes the liver to burn, so to speak, severe inflammation of the liver, and that's why you end up having the jaundice as a major complication. And so this is very deadly. It can certainly cause death, and we want to be ensure. I mean, it's something that we definitely will be keeping our ears and eyes wide open. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Good morning, caller. Hello, good morning. Okay.
All right. So on the international scene, people are still dying of cancer linked to asbestos, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicated. And despite decades of regulations meant to limit dangerous exposure, starting in 1971, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration has regulated how much asbestos workers can be exposed to, because it contains tiny fibers that can cause lung disease or cancer if they are swallowed or inhaled. The Environmental Protection Agency regulates asbestos too, setting requirements for inspecting, demolishing, and renovating buildings that contain materials made with asbestos, like insulation, vinyl tiles, roofing, shingles, and paint. But a recent CDC analysis found that thousands of people are still dying each year from a type of cancer called malignant mesothelioma. That is associated with inhaling asbestos fibers, even briefly or in small amounts, even after decades of regulation. Between 1999 and 2015, there were 45,221 deaths in the U.S., and the majority of those who died were men. Mm-hmm. Alton, this is obviously, you know, very serious, mm-hmm. because, you know, if you're telling me that over 45,000 men are dying every year from mesothelioma, mm-hmm. As a result of inhaling asbestos. Mm-hmm. So this is obviously quite serious. Mm-hmm.
I know a couple of years ago, this was, you know, very well, you know, spoken about in the media. The Ministry of Health had some concerns. There were a few buildings that were demolished and were totally were made abandoned merely because of suspected asbestos presence. I know that the ministry still is very much concerned, though we've seen a huge reduction in the cases now here. But again, men would be more privy, in a sense, to be exposed to this, merely because they are usually the builders.
Right.
So they are the ones that usually would repair, would construct, reconstruct those buildings. And so even so, they need to be cautious. But I guess it also raises the issue of occupational health and safety, ensuring that our construction workers adhere to safety policies and regulations as it is related, particularly as it relates to gears that they need to be wearing when they work. And I think it's still kind of a problem here that we see people on sites and they're not wearing the necessary gears. Signs are not erected to say caution, danger. I'm often extremely impressed with the gas companies. I mean, you drive through Kingfield and you see signs all over the place. Mm-hmm. No smoking. You know, no cell phones. You need to wear this particular clothing to get in. You know, you see that a lot in the gas stations, mm-hmm, and those places. But you know, if you get onto many of our construction sites, sad to say, you don't really see much of it. Mm. So it really gives rise to the nature that we really need to concentrate more on occupational health and safety to protect ourselves from harmful chemicals.
Thank you, Carlton, for your, mm-hmm, contribution to the news items. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll be discussing emergency medical services. And we have a wonderful guest in store this morning who will share his expertise and knowledge with us. So we'll be right back after the break.
Introducing listen. Jolly's Pharmacy, brand new website, www.jollys.dm. It's your time to jump the line. Shop now at jollys.dm and have your items delivered in the comfort of your office. No more standing in line. No need to use your lunch hour to shop. Hassle-free shopping, safe and secure. Jollys.dm features rush delivery, 1 hour. In-store pickup, regular delivery, 5 p.m. Cut-off time, 4 p.m. It's your time to jump the line. Visit us at www.jollys.dm. Jolly's Pharmacy, leading the way in healthcare.
You're listening to Health Vibes.
So we're back with you, and as we did promise, we will be focusing on accidents today and emergencies. And we have one of Mr. Wayne Leighton, who is the public relations officer for the fire and ambulance service here with us. He's also a very senior member of that service-oriented agency. And so we are very happy to have you with us, Mr. Leighton. Good morning.
Thank you very much.
Good morning to you, Mr. Leighton. And also, too, I wanted to add that the Ministry of Health has undertaken efforts to improve its disaster emergency response plan. Recently, we heard about a one-week training in mass casualty management, which was facilitated by the Ministry of Health and PAHO. And 31 individuals participated and are now certified in mass casualty management. The training was held in February, and participants included fire and police officers, the Office of Disaster Management, and the Cadet Corps. So, I mean, there are efforts being made to sensitize, you know, the contingents and the general public.
Definitely. I mean, by you reading this, it just reminded me of the major accident that took place in St. Lucia just about 2 years ago, where the bus, where the bus plunged into the precipice, killing 16 or so people coming from a funeral. And then there was also the explosion that recently took place just 2 weeks ago in St. Lucia. And how prepared are we with these types of emergencies? And so, hence the reason why, you know, this topic is so relevant today. So, Mr. Leighton, just give us a synopsis, though, in terms of the fire and ambulance service, what it does, and its responsibilities, and the likes.
Well, generally, the responsibilities of the fire and ambulance service is to respond to emergencies to save lives. But as part of that, one of the responsibilities or mandate that we have is that of also safety. So we are the prime agency in Dominica responsible for ensuring that Dominicans live in a safe environment. Yes. And that is in terms of, well, we have fire safety. We have general safety, which would be occupational safety and health. We have road safety forms part of that also. So everything that you have to talk about safety. Oh, we also have marine safety. And that would be safety of life at sea. And so we have the responsibility or the mandate to carry out that responsibility in Dominica to ensure that Dominica and Dominicans, live in a safe environment. So that's basically what the fire department is about. And we do not only respond to fires, like, you know, there's a lot of persons who say the fire officers just respond to fires, and seeing that we don't have much fires in the air, then they do nothing. That's a general concept. But that would be so far from the truth. Because apart from that, we engage ourselves in doing a lot to prepare persons. And whereas we cannot prevent the things from happening, but we could prepare ourselves in case it happens, that whatever happens, it doesn't go to the extent where you cannot handle it. We try to engage persons in doing that. So it's a matter of preparing ourselves, and fire department does that also.
So you're talking about continuous education with fire, you know, with the fire service and ambulance service.
Definitely. So that education is not only within our training, within the department, so departmental training, but it also has to do with going out in the community. We have a lot of community-based programs that we live with. And as a matter of fact, let me just say also that the Ministry of National Security in a whole, we entail a lot of those type of programs. We have the Office of Disaster Management, who falls under the same ministry as the fire services. We have also the police. So each of those organizations, we have our responsibility to go out in the community. And we know quite a bit of work. And as a matter of fact, we consider ourselves, the fire department, the police, ODM as partners.
Right.
So we work as partners, and a lot of work that we do it as partners the time.
And I like that concept that you regard yourselves as partners, because essentially it would take a joint effort to respond to an emergency efficiently, you know. And so I do like that, and I also appreciate the fact that while you are aware of what the concept may be, that you are still working towards, and you're always preparing, and you guys are always working and training to ensure that if something does happen, in the event that something does happen, you are already prepared to be able to respond to that in an efficient manner. And I can appreciate that.
Yes. Right. Okay, so I'm going to take the discussion in two folds, because you're also a fireman.
Yes.
So I'm going to start off a little about fire, and then afterwards we will climb up to the accidents. Let's give us the laws as it relates to fire, because we do see people, you know, just lighting fires in the yard. Somebody have a tree, their leaves dead, and you know, just take a match and just light indiscriminately without asking any question. I know in St. Kitts, when I live there, it is against the law to just light any fire. You must call the fire. You have to seek permission before you light any fire. Is this the same law in Dominica? Is there a law?
The laws exist. And presently we have the Bushfires Act, which has been in existence for the last amendment was in 1991. So we have those acts in place, those legislation in place. And where safety is concerned, there's always three steps in action. We call it the three E's of safety. So we have engineering, which would be creating the laws and putting the mechanisms in place. Then we would have education, and then enforcement. And education is the largest span. And in Dominica, I would want to say it like, we do not have the culture of safety, because there's a lot of things we do contrary to safety. So it is a mandate of the fire department now to get persons involved. So whereas persons could be punished for doing something, because we know that ignorance of the law is no reason. But one of the ways that the fire department has used in the past, and we still use it, is to get persons to understand. And trust me, we've been doing that work in the community, and the response we are getting, because persons are saying, "You're serious? I did not know that." So for example, earlier on you talked about the cell phones. At the gas stations you see the signs. But that's a practice that we did not have before, and we have worked on that. So we are educating persons. And at this time of the year in particular would be normally known as the bushfire season in Dominica, because it is the Carim, and we normally have a real dry Carim. So what we have been doing is going around the communities, public meetings, NGO meetings, you know, trainings, in teaching people about the dangers of fire, what fire can do. Yes, we have the Bushfire Act. And the Bushfire Act says that you should not light or any rubbish, shrub, garbage near other persons, other person's property. And it also says that you can be punished. And it also says that if there is damage to the other person's property, you take the responsibility, you must take the responsibility. You could be challenged in the court for that. But do we want that to happen? Yes, so that's why we go out teach people. So yes, there is a lapse. There is a lapse in persons adhering to that. Because sometimes even in the town itself, you find persons burning, and then people have to call the fire department. So here's the procedure. We will come to get that fire extinguished. Because it's within a neighborhood, the smoke, and as with us, small medical background, and Mr. Lando may be able to stretch on that a little more. Somebody living with the illness of asthma and that smoke, you just kill that person. You have an elderly person with their breathing compromised, that's a problem. You have infants, newborn babies, so that's a problem. So what the fire department does is, in most cases, we go to those places, we get that fire extinguished. But there is also the responsibility of the persons in the neighborhood who can take it a little further. The procedures would be, if you go through environmental health, the Environmental Health Department. And I cannot speak about what the Environmental Health Department does.
Okay.
But that's a concern to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be able to, yes. So the fire department would give evidence that, yes, that fire was lighted. In most cases, if somebody does not say we burned that garbage, somebody might come, or that person is the one who lit it. And we normally talk to the person, and the person agrees it should be out.
Mm-hmm. What about hazardous goods? You had your house painted over, and you have the old cans, and you decide you're going to burn that in the yard. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, as a fireman, you know, how prevalent have you been? You know, how concerned are you?
They happen, and we are very concerned at the fire department. The normal procedure, and that's one of the reasons we ask persons to liaise with the fire station in your area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are simple things that we could talk to officers, call the fire. Look, I have this advice on what to do.
Right.
And the advice would be, because the solid waste management system in our country would be able to deal with those type of products.
Mm-hmm.
So we advise persons up to today, if I know the Solid Waste Management Corporation tells you, you should sort out your garbage and have it handled by the solid waste and not do what you want to feed. And in a lot of cases, persons don't take those things into consideration and they simply burn. And you talked about paint.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to talk now about styrofoam.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Because the burning of styrofoam gives off a real toxic fume.
Hmm.
And we use a lot of styrofoam in Dominica.
Yeah.
And persons simply burn that at their home. So that's a no-no. We do not encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that we do in encouraging persons, and we know the nature of Dominica, it's a lot of rural area, and you know, persons sweep the yard and collect the leaves. Okay, yes. We advise persons, okay, in a neighborhood, tell your neighbor, I have some garbage to burn.
Mm-hmm.
The neighbor might have some also.
Hmm.
We could get a burning peat. That could be either of concrete, or we could have a metal drum. We place that in it, put holes in the metal drum, put the material in it and burn it. It's controlled burning.
Mm-hmm.
You could ask advice on what type of material to burn or the material that you're not sure of. Let solid waste deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we advise persons in those areas also what material should burn. So here we are. Local carbon materials, paper, leaf, wood, those things, you can burn them. Cloth. Textiles which may have paints, we say don't burn that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fumes that it gives off, it's not good for persons to inhale.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? So you have to be cognizant of the fact that materials that we use, they can be poisonous. And just listen to the fire department. Call the fire station in your area and you can get good advice on how to burn and where to burn and when.
People sometimes burn items. Some people may use kerosene, some people may use gasoline. Which of the two is the safer?
If I would have to go for one, I would tell you kerosene.
Mm-hmm.
Gasoline has what you call a fire point, which is much lower than that of kerosene. Mm-hmm. So gasoline doesn't need the liquid. As a matter of fact, if you pour gasoline on the floor, it evaporates as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the fumes or the vapors, and the vapors are what catches the light. Yes. Mm. So if I should explain, and if we go back to the cell phones at the gas stations, if you got by the way, this is something that we have tried and tested within the fire prevention unit. Start a fire, get a gallon of gasoline in a bucket, pour onto that fire, and the fire was extinguished.
The gallon of gasoline?
Yes.
Hmm.
Because the ratio of the fuel, which is the gasoline, to that of the flame that we had, it was too much fluid for the flame, and it extinguished it. But when we got a cup of that gasoline, put it onto that fire, it blazed.
Oh.
Wow.
Because it was just the liquid falling, and it extinguished the flame.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a gallon of gasoline and you have it exposed, uncovered, and you simply tilt your head sideways to the level of the top of the container, you would see vapors above that container.
So fast.
But if that gallon of gasoline, you would have taken a candle, tied to, and I'm talking about a long stick, yeah? Mm-hmm. What we used, it was just about 6 feet long. Place it over that gallon of gasoline, the gasoline caught a light.
Mm.
Because the only the vapors of the gasoline was needed mm-hmm. for the fire. Mm-hmm. So if you are lighting fire, now you have the gasoline, you pour and then you put a match, you'll hear a sudden vroom, which we call an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Because too much of the vapor is present.
Mm-hmm.
With the kerosene, that would not happen. And that happens simply because the gasoline has a lower fire point, an ignition point than that of the kerosene. So the kerosene would be better for you for that type of activity. Gasoline should not be used okay. for starting fires.
So let me ask you another question. In plans for your homes and so mm-hmm. forth, you're planning, you're building, you submitted your plan, does the fire department review or have any type of say in terms of safety measures with your homes? So even before you build the structure, that they can look at the plan and see what you need to do. I remember some time ago, I was living in an apartment, and my doorway, my main doorway, as soon as I opened it, my stove was right at the front there. Mm. And a fireman came to my house and he said to me, that's not supposed to be there at all. Mm. The stove not supposed to be so close to the doorway. So are there...
Okay, at the fire prevention unit in particular, what we do, we review plans from the physical planning. So the physical planning would forward it to the fire department for review. But it's based on the category of that plan.
Oh.
Now, in general, in safety everywhere, in any country that you would go, one of the things that you would learn or you would hear is that private residents, public administration may not be able to determine what type of things you have or your activities and so on based on safety legislation. What they would be able to do is what type of material you would use for construction.
Mm.
Okay. But so we have in Dominica commercial plans. Every building built for the public to go to, those plans come to the fire service. So we're talking about apartment buildings, mm-hmm. shops, supermarket stores, churches, mm. restaurant, bars, those type of buildings, that plan must come to the fire department. And we have to affix safety measures, fire safety measures to those type of construction. But persons with small residence, private resident with two floors, and I would not want, it's off my head right now, but the square footage mm-hmm. has something to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
So if it fall below that size of building, that plan would not come to the fire department. But two floors, if you are going to have apartments mm-hmm. or other persons living in that house, yes, your plan would come to the fire service for fire safety recommendations. And those recommendations would be like the slope of your stairs, how many exits, smoke detectors, the amount of fire extinguishers, if you need a smoke alarm, an alarm system, those type of recommendations. If there is a hydrant close, if there's not, we would have to recommend that if it's, for example, a hotel, apartment building, hydrant systems, those things there, we look at that. Yes, those plans come to the fire service.
Okay, great. I know we have to switch to another area
yes.
shortly, but I wanted to ask you though, in terms of, I know from your reports, many of the homes that are gutted by fire seem to be electrical. Many of them seem to be electrical from some of the news that I've heard. You have so you've suspected that there was an electrical fire. A fire has begun in your house. What do you do? Do you stay back and try to out the fire? Do you leave the fire? Let's say a fire is an entire room is already got to the fire. What do you do? Do you leave the fire?
Or do you take a bucket of water and try to throw it on the fire?
What do you
do? Okay, so when a fire exists, there's a lot you could do. But one of the things we ask persons, and that's your responsibility, make yourself safe. Call the fire department first thing. Second, hey, it's your property. You may want to save something. So here's what we teach persons. If you have your smoke alarms, smoke detectors, you could detect that fire starting very early. So we take that training to the community, like I said earlier. And one of the things that we teach persons in the community, a fire doesn't, except if it's an explosion, a fire grows. So it starts small. Actually, it starts by smoke. There is smoke before a fire. So all material smoke before flames start. And then there is the growth aspect of that fire. So it starts, let's say I'm choosing here, this monitor. It may start here, but then it grows. And it has a growing time of at least 6 minutes.
Wow.
So okay. With early detection, there's a lot you can do to prevent that fire from even
growing,
beginning its growth. Yes? And when it starts growing, then it spreads. So everywhere in the room heats up to a temperature where this, and the flame does not have to stay here and jump over there. But what will happen, the couch in the corner here, it will get heated up to a temperature where it automatically bursts into flames.
But even way before the fire and the smoke, what are some of the safety measures that parents can take, especially when they have young children in the house? Because, you know, I know sometimes a child may see you lighting a match all the time and then become curious. You know, so what are some of the safety measures that we can take in the homes?
One, keep children away from all flammables. Anything that could start a light, all flames, open flames, candles, matches, keep them away from it. Two, if a fire starts in your home, evacuate, call the fire department. If you have an extinguisher and the fire is small, attack it. If not, save yourself. We teach persons that once you get out of the building, do not re-enter that building. You get out, stay out. Only fight a fire if you have the resources to do that, because that fire could grow rapidly. 6 minutes pass and the place is heated, that fire could grow. If you are in a building where the fire has already started, obviously there will be a lot of smoke. So we teach persons, once the place is smoke-logged, you get on your fours, which means you creep, because standing, you would have less oxygen as hot air rises. So the cool air would drop, so you'd be able to breathe down there clearly. I would want to say also, teach all children about escaping during any fire emergency. And here's something else that Mr. Lando may be interested in. Let's know our homes.
Yes.
So a simple thing we ask persons to practice, it's a little getting yourself involved. Practice walking around your home with your eyes closed.
That's good.
So you could enter, walk around, and exit with your eyes closed. And one of the reasons, when there's a lot of smoke, you cannot see. You might not be able to see your hands, which might be 6 inches in front of you. So which means you are in the dark.
So you could stumble.
But if you know where you are, you could walk to your exit. Also, let's not clog up our homes. We find a lot of homes really clogged up, and sometimes you have to squeeze through to pass. And that is keeping your environment safe and healthy. Too much clutter, it's not good for us. And we teach the home safe home concept. A home where you can relax even when you're sick. So even if the firefighters have to come to your home to get you, they can do that with ease. So your alleys, you know, when the plan was drawn, you went to physical planning, they said, okay, the corridor was not large enough. And even after making recommendation for this one large, then you tell the constructor, hey, I need more room space. So my corridor, you can make it that small. Okay, let's think of it. A fire officer with a stretcher or spine board, because you're in bed and you can't move, they need space. So 4 persons carrying a stretcher, we need space. Or 2 persons carrying a stretcher, you need space to maneuver. Yes? So corridors must not be clogged up. That's important. Your home is your paradise. So let's make our home a home safe home.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. That makes sense.
Because, like, I've heard that if you suspect that you have an electric electrical fire, you could use sand to out the fire, but not water.
Okay. As per extinguishing fires, we are used to the term electrical fires, but although we operate under the British standards, and from 1998, I off my head, British standards moved away from electrical fires. Mm-hmm. Yes, so instead we have fires from energized electrical appliances, but what you will find, if you turn off the electricity, the fire doesn't stop. So electricity, and one of the things we learned in safety is that many fires at, well, most fires at residential homes is because of electricity, either the presence of it or the absence of it or the misuse of it. And a lot of fires at our homes is because, in most cases, it's because of the misuse of electricity, and not necessarily just because electricity was there.
Explain that by misuse. What you?
Overloading.
Okay.
We get signs. One of the signs that we get at our homes frequently, which indicates that a fire is imminent, is that of your shutting off of your electrical supply. You plug in something and your electricity shuts off. And then you turn back on the breaker. This is a sign of, one, either you have a faulty electrical installation, two, you have a faulty electrical appliance, or you're overloading.
There's too many things plugged in at the
same time. Something, one of those three, caused the electricity supply to shut off, because it is a safety mechanism that, in case that happens, it shuts off. Because if it stays on, what you would find happening in the connections, you will have overheating and then a fire could start. If you have a faulty appliance, when it displays its bad behavior, you could either get electrocuted or fire could start in it. So the electrical supply shuts off and you simply turn on the breaker and you back on. But in learning electricity, one of the things that you find out is, whenever that happens, the integrity of your installation, it decreases. And there is a span, well, electricity has to do with resistance also. And there is a time when that resistance will not apply. And the fault will not be detected, and it will cause harm to your building. So in a lot of cases, it's because we misuse electricity, overloading, too many things plugged on to the wall socket. And we teach that each socket, it's one appliance.
Okay.
If you are to use a multi-plug strip, do we have time that I could talk? Yes, on electricity. The multi-plug strip that we have, it was mainly designed for office equipment. And one of the things that we don't do is read those multi-plug strips. They have a load-bearing capacity. And in most cases, it is 1,500 watts. And so, things that should, if there are six areas on that multi-plug strip, what we call the extension cord, some persons call it, I deliberately use the term multi-plug strip because that's its name. But a lot of people call it surge protectors. But no, it's not. The surge protectors are normally heavy, big, and you could has two handles that you could lift it up. But the multi-plug strip, some of them are equipped with a surge protecting device on it, and that's a simple strip, and when it's overloaded, it breaks off. So you'll see it, and it has the red switch on it. So, and it tells you equipped with surge protection device. But we do those overloading, and overloading is bad. Overloading our electrical circuit, it is very bad.
Adapters as well.
Adapters, like the word says, adapt. So you adapt the electricity to your use. So why not practice adapting your use to the electricity supply? But we use the adapters because the connection that we have is not suited for the plug. Now in Dominica, the standard is again the three-pin, right? The standard three-pin plug, which is the one which is not wronged, but rectangular.
Like in London.
Because we follow British standards. So this is the standard here. But we may have an equipment with the flat pin, which is normally European, or the wronged one. So we get an adapter, place it, and we use it. But We don't have time to talk what happened in the adapters. That's a story by itself. But that encourages overloading. And most of the adapters that we get, they are multi-sprung adapters, multi-plug adapters that multiple things could plug onto them. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens, Mr. Lando, is when you plug in one of those appliances, inside of the adapter, you have like sparks network. Because it is metal, so the electrical current moves from one metal to the plug. And if you put your ears close to it, you may hear it. So that is spark moving from one area to another. If it's in the dark, you would see the spark, the blue sparks inside of those adapters, especially when you have more than one appliances plug. So that can lead to a disaster. And to advise the public, if you have an adapter plugged in and or you have an appliance plugged in for a long while, when you pull it out, you may see the end of the plug is green. It means that arcing was taking place, or sometimes it shines. Arc welding was taking place inside there. So a lot of time when you pull out the plug, it can't come out because it is stuck. It is welded on the inside. And that could be one of the reasons why we trip our electrical current trip all the time.
Now, we're almost out of time, but I do want to get to like emergencies. So let's say, you know, there's a vehicular accident and, you know, people rush on the scene. They want to see what happened. What are the right steps to take for the first responders?
Okay. First responders. We consider first responders as the person who reach at the scene first. First thing you should do is call the emergency services. Call the fire department. You may well get advice from the fire department on what to do. What not to do, don't take pictures. What you should do is observe the area. So we'd ask you, check if there's any fuel leakage from that vehicle. That is very important. Because under circumstances where we would move the person from the vehicle, it would be, for example, if that vehicle is compromised, a fire may start. You may want to move that victim from it. Because dealing with a victim at a motor vehicle accident, we do what we call extrication. And extrication is not moving the vehicle from the wreck, but moving the wreck from the vehicle. And I'm going to use a scenario, for example. The accident at Antrim with the boss of the Taurus, the chauffeur of that vehicle was pinned in the vehicle. And nobody knew until the fire department cut off the dashboard. That's when they realized there's a piece of metal going through. Yes, so had persons gone and tried to remove this guy,
you'd have torn him.
You would have torn his leg apart. So extrication is removing the wreck from the patient. So which means, in most cases of those motor vehicle accidents, you have suspected spinal injury. So if you don't treat that person or deal with that person correctly, you would have a vegetable on your hand. Because we know that once the person's spinal cord is compromised, that person's body may become useless. So you would have to stabilize that person. And stabilizing that person would also mean if you have to dress wounds, apply oxygen, all those things, you do it with the person there until you can remove that person, that wreck from that person, and transport them. So it's a matter of if you find that motor vehicle accident, observe, look, call the fire department, tell them what you see. See how many persons were involved in that incident. Sometimes somebody could have flown out of that vehicle because they were not wearing seatbelts. Look around, so in the immediate impact zone, we are talking about a buffer zone of about 15 feet, 15 to 30 feet, you look. Do those things instead and secure the area. See if that vehicle is going down in a precipice because it may need stabilization with ropes and those things. And give the fire department that information. That's the best we're asking persons to do. Help us in that way.
So what if one of the people who were the first, you know, people on the scene is a medical person? Can they assist or should they still wait? Do what you've said.
You need a medical background to stabilize the person. So if they can, and a doctor on the scene would not want to compromise himself neither. So if he can give medical assistance to that person whilst that person is trapped. If that person is conscious and you ask them, can you move your legs? And that person say yes, I can move your legs. See if that person could get out. Yes? If the person just need you to assist them in getting, because if they can move their leg, there's a possibility they may not have any spinal injury. If that person can move out, assist them. If that person tell you, I am trapped, do not try to pull them. And one of the motor functions that we normally lose when we have accidents is that of the legs. Because if the spinal column gets compromised, the legs in maybe about 3 to 5 minutes will not be able to function. And you could ask the person all those questions. And we also ask persons, one of the ways that you can help, really help, is psychological.
Yes.
Comfort that person. Tell the person, I have called the fire department everything and they said they will be there shortly.
And everything
you speak
is going to, be
to
okay.
that person. But we always say if the impact zone is compromised, you should not compromise yourself. Because sometimes you may go and decide, man, that man's leg is broken and I'm going to help him. And then the vehicle catches fire.
Well, you know what? I like what you said about helping the person, comforting them, speaking to them. Because a lot of times you find that if there are accidents and people are recording in the background, you're hearing the commentary, boy, that person died. Oh, she broke her leg. I mean, these are not the things that you should say because the person can go into some kind of shock.
True.
So I do like what you said.
Actually, that's correct. When you, for example, you may say, man, boy, that bad. Oh, my. The very person who said to themselves earlier, because you met them, then they said, okay, I'm going to survive and I have to be strong for my daughter who is next to me. And then you come and you look at the person and you say, oh, my, boy, that deadly. Oh, you just broke down the person. So the daughter who was depending on her mother's comforting words, even her mother knew she herself was injured. Her daughter is going to say, you're lying to me because you are injured worst. So we should avoid those things. And as we can never stop talking about the video recordings and come on,
it's really bad.
I can't find a word. I remember that movie, Despicable Me. Despicable Me to do that. So we advise in persons, please avoid those actions and assist the persons by calling the fire department.
Wow.
That was very interesting. So did I. I mean, I really hope that our listeners learned something. I mean, there was so much information we couldn't even really take any calls today. But I did see the
persons
lights flashing.
Yes, they
always are listening. And I hope that every person can share some information that they learned today with somebody else in order to prevent and to be more aware of your environment and what takes place, and especially in responding to accidents or, you know, other emergencies.
Definitely. I certainly will have Mr. Lita on in a subsequent show. I think we want to really explore more on the accident aspect, the do's and don'ts, and you know, just to explore a bit more about it. But I think I really learned a lot. I think it was a great show. We want to really thank you for tuning in to another episode of Hell Vibes. We are always, always trying to bring the most relevant information to you. Next week, we will be focusing on immunization. We'll be having an expert here talking about immunization, why it's important to have your children immunized. Until next time.
But before we do leave, let me just say to Mr. Leita, thank you for being here and sharing your expertise with us.
You're very much welcome. And just before you go, let me just, as persons, remember the number to your closest fire station. Know the fire station which is responsible for your area, and you could always call them for information. What we gave this morning was just, well, the sand still did not reach the bottom of the bucket. But you could call the fire station in your area and ask for information, and you will always get those information from them.
Okay.
Definitely.
Thank you.
All right. So, Dominican, here you had it. Go out and do something productive. I'm your host, Carlton.
And I'm Pearl Fontaine Butler. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
I know that the sun will